TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. All sports.
This is my spot.
All the time. A division of Bell Media.
Patrick Marleau does it again. He scores the series winner.
If the series goes any deeper, we may even be accused of biting eventually.
And the New York Islanders have defeated the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Scores. Harris off the blocker of Budai and in. Senators win it. 3-2 in overtime.
The big plays. The big stories. The biggest news from across the hockey landscape. This is NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things NHL. TSN 1290.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at tsn1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Michael Remus is on loan to us from Rick Ralph and the Rona Roundtable. Coming up on today's show in about 15 minutes, Ed Willis from the Vancouver Province is going to join us to talk about the Vancouver Canucks collapse versus the San Jose Sharks. At the top of the next hour, 7 p.m., Arthur Staple, our good friend from Newsday on Long Island, to talk to us about the Penguins-Islanders playoff series. We'll keep you up to date on all the games as they get underway. You can watch those games on the various networks. TSN will have the Rangers-Capitals game coming up in about 30 minutes' time. We'll keep you up to date on all the games. Before then, and as we go throughout the show, we'll talk about all the series. Richie, Ezzy, first of all, good afternoon. Ezzy, my salutations especially to you on a job well done on Saturday's show as Richard and I were away. Remus, same for you as well. But we have to start with the San Jose-Vancouver series. Mm-hmm. First of all, I think we all agree that it was a surprise that the way that the Sharks dominated the Canucks in this series. But looking back at last night's game, did you think that the penalty assessed to Daniel Sedin in overtime that led to the San Jose Sharks' series-winning goal was a legitimate penalty?
I think at the very least it was a questionable call, and I think Daniel Sedin voiced his displeasure with the call, and he was kicked out of the game for that call. But as far as the Vancouver Canucks are concerned, I think everyone is expecting big-time changes, and whether it's Daniel Sedin's penalty in overtime or it was Henrik Sedin's high-sticking penalty, if you guys remember from Game 3, the Vancouver Canucks took way too many penalties. The San Jose Sharks had a good power play in the regular season. And we're in a situation right now where the Vancouver Canucks have to decide, are they going to go full-out rebuild, full-out clean the house, fire the coach, fire the GM, trade Luongo, buy out Luongo, whatever. I mean, I'm going a little ahead of myself here, Drew, but as far as that penalty goes specifically, no, I didn't think it was a penalty.
Richard.
Yeah, Drew, it wasn't a penalty. It was a shoulder-to-shoulder hit, but I think at the end of the day, they didn't deserve to win. Did that make a difference in one game? Sure. But where were the Canucks? And I know that's getting off topic in terms of that penalty, but I don't want to get necessarily preoccupied with the refereeing last night. It was bad. Yeah, it was really bad. The Bieksa call, too, you could certainly take issue with.
Right, the cross-check at the towards the last 3-4 minutes of the game that led to the tying goal.
And let's be honest, the refereeing and the other series have been questionable as well. You know, we'll talk later about the goal in the Montreal-Ottawa game last night, about the face-off on the wrong side. So they're not the only team getting the short end of the stick. But you go down 3-0, you're late. You're almost assuredly done in any event.
I agree with you wholeheartedly there. I'm not saying that the difference in this series, by no stretch at all, was the difference in this series mm-hmm. The officiating and the penalties. Although it is worth noting that San Jose had 24 power play opportunities in the four games, Vancouver only had 10. That's a pretty big disparity in this day and age in the NHL.
But you know, the Canucks look slow and old, didn't they?
Yeah, I agreed. I don't think that
to have the puck to draw a penalty.
Yeah, I don't
almost,
think
yeah, almost always.
Yeah, I mean, the San Jose Sharks were by far the better of the two teams.
And they're playing well, but I mean, the San Jose Sharks aren't the 2010 Blackhawks here.
No.
That's what they look like against Vancouver.
Looking at the series in Vancouver as a whole, and looking at the Vancouver Canucks outlook and their picture and everything else, what's one adjective that you would use to describe the Vancouver Canucks in the here and now and going forward?
in transition. Is that one word or is that two words? I don't know.
I'll let it slide.
Richie mentioned that they're slow and old, which I agree with. But, you know, we talked about before the series, remember we talked with Ben Kuzma about whose window is closing quicker or, you know, who's really the desperate team. I got to be honest, I completely misread this series. You can replay the playoff preview show that we did. It was last Monday. So what's that, a week and a half ago? And I thought that there was a little bit less pressure on Vancouver than there was in previous years. Mm-hmm. Because you remember last year, they had the pressure of repeating the Stanley Cup final run. This year, it was not getting out of the first round, really. And I completely misread the series. In the back of my mind, Richie, I knew that San Jose was a good team and that they had lots of weapons and strong in net, as evidenced by the fact Antti Niemi was nominated for the Vezina Trophy. But Vancouver completely mailed it in here. And the first two games were actually pretty close. It's not like the Vancouver Canucks played awful in the first couple of games. The overtime game, Brent Burns, they were very close to winning that game. But when you're talking about where they're at now, because they're swept now, so moving forward, someone has to be held accountable. And I'll be shocked if it isn't Alain Vigneault, because the way he had his guys prepared for the series was very, very questionable. And, you know, you mentioned the penalties earlier, Drew, and Kevin Bieksa after Game 3, I thought that looked like a guy that was just fed up and frustrated and almost already defeated, complaining about the treatment that the Sedin twins were getting and how Joe Thornton and Logan Couture were acting. It's like, Kevin, you know, and I really like Bieksa as a hockey player. He used to play for the Moose, and he's a good, rugged hockey player. But get it done on the ice. I mean, that just looked like a guy who was completely defeated, and he almost knew that they were going to get swept in that fourth game. San Jose deserved to win that series. I don't think they dominated Vancouver except for that third game. That they dominated that game. But, you know, Vancouver was in it in Game 4, and the other two games were one-goal games, so.
Yeah, you know, one-goal games, Ez, but as Mike Babcock said last year, you know, you look at all the different stats, so what matters most is who wins, and, and that's who won, and, you know, 4-0 isn't close. He said, you know, last year when they played against, I believe it was Nashville. And you know what? This team, first of all, I'm with Ezzy that I said Vancouver would win this series too, so I was completely off as well.
Our predictions, because we like to man up when we're wrong.
Absolutely.
Richard, you and I had Vancouver in 6. Ezzy, you had Vancouver in 5.
Absolutely, and I'm willing to admit it. I mean, San Jose completely surprised me in this series. And a guy like Joe Pavelski, to me, was even over Logan Couture or Patrick Marleau, to me, was the guy that was the MVP of the series for me. But really, you look at top to bottom, Brent Burns has adapted really well to playing going back to forward. And you look top, I mean, we had Randy Hahn on Saturday when you guys were in Toronto with Michael and David, and we had Randy Hahn on, and we'd ask him about a guy like Tommy Wingles, just their depth players. Or, you know, you look at a guy like, who am I thinking of here? Anyways, they're getting, you know, really good performances from a lot of players, and they caught the Canucks by surprise, and winning those two games in Vancouver were huge, and they never looked back after that.
Richie, your adjective to describe the Vancouver Canucks.
Looks we got off track there. I mean, as he talked about the word transition, which is what they're kind of going through right now. I mean, maybe it's a matter of desperation almost at this point, because Drew, this team, you know, they've been a lot of people have been using the San Jose analogy where Thornton and Marleau got a little bit older, and they needed to kind of augment that core with young and up and coming players. If you remember, San Jose traded up to get Logan Couture that year. It was a bold move. I believe Ottawa 67s is where he played, which was where Doug Wilson played, the general manager. So I think Brian Kilgrave was still coaching that time. Maybe some insider knowledge there. He's been a tremendous player. Obviously, Joe Pavelski's worked really well in the NHL, even though skating is at a premium, and he's not the best skater. But the problem with the Canucks is that they don't have, and San Jose had a deep system that they traded, you know, Brent Burns for, traded Charlie Coyle, other guys, draft picks. They have a deep system that they utilize to make that bigger run. And Vancouver never really had a deep system. Their system is essentially bare now.
Mm-hmm.
And their core guys are getting older. So, you know, people talked, and H&L had Farhan Lalji on at 5 to 5, and he talked about getting 2 top 6 forwards. Well, where are you going to get 2 top 6 forwards from? I mean, that's just what are you going to do? You're going to trade one of your core defensemen? That's probably the best bet, because in reality, they have 4 top 4 guys. So you can trade one and try and fill it and fill that spot in a different way. But you're also creating a hole to fill a need. And when you don't have organizational depth, and the Jets know all about this, you trade one guy, you fill a need, and then you create a need. So this team isn't in trouble, and it's going to fall on Alain Vigneault's shoulders, and it probably has to at this point. The team looks a little bit apathetic, but Mike Gillis bears as much, if not more, of the responsibility for the way this team's gone. And I liked a lot of his trades when he made them. You know, I liked the David Booth move. That blew up in his face. I thought the Zach Cassie move could end up paying off. I didn't love it necessarily, but I thought it could end up paying off. It didn't. It's busted so far. Now, it's still early in that one, but it's busted so far. What about the other moves? I didn't like the Jason Garrison one that much. We talked about that in the show. I don't think any of us really liked it. I mean, was he noticeable at all in the playoffs here? Even this year. I know it's his first year in Vancouver. So that's another one. Not trading Luongo and Schneider, guys.
Well, go ahead.
But that's another one. I mean, you keep going and going and going. What has he done to give Alain? You know, he's given Alain Vigneault a good team. Alain Vigneault came within one game of the Cup. That team choked. Let's just call it what it is. They choked. But Mike Gillis hasn't exactly been a mastermind. And Eric DeHatrick, one of our favorite guests, says it in the Globe and Mail this morning. You know, for all the forward thinking, the sleep, the timing of the sleep, ensuring the team has the best possible psychologists and the best sleep measures,
sleep patterns,
and the best
that.
statistical that. At the end of the day, they're likely going to rely on an old NHL way of doing things, changing the coach because you can't change 20 players.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to continue on the Vancouver Canucks. Ed Willis of the Vancouver province is going to join us. Worth noting, news out of New York, Mark Stahl not in the Rangers lineup for Game 4 versus the Washington Capitals. You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and the website is www.illegalcurve.com.
The TSN 1290 NHL Midweek Hotline.
We welcome on the NHL Midweek Hotline Ed Willis from the Vancouver province. Ed, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Doing very well. Thank you, Ed. You wrote in today's Vancouver Province that the Canucks got old before our eyes in this series. Should we have seen this coming this quickly?
No, not this quickly. I mean, you know, it's one of those hindsight is 2020 things, and there were probably some early warning signs. But I don't think anybody thought they'd go out in four games the way they went out to, a San Jose team. That the prevailing logic in Vancouver was the best first-round matchup for the Canucks.
Ed, I have a question for you that's probably been asked to you in the hours since the Canucks were swept by the San Jose Sharks. Is there any way that Alain Vigneault is back as the head coach next year?
There is a way. I mean, it's the faint hope clause. And, you know, the GM Mike Gillis is a different cat. So I don't think he'll do the reflexive action, and it probably very much depends on who he has in mind for the next head coach as well. So, you know, I'd give it, maybe 1 in 20 chance, but it is possible.
We mentioned Mike Gillis there, Ed. You know, is his job in jeopardy at all? And if not, why isn't it?
Well, let me answer the first part. It isn't because the owner, Francesco Aquilini, has a lot invested in Gillis, both literally and figuratively. He was the out-of-the-box choice as the GM. He was the guy who was going to shake things up. And I don't think Aquilini is going to admit defeat that quickly. Should he be held accountable? He's been here for 5 years, long enough for his drafts, for his trades, for his free agent signings to make an impact. And it just hasn't happened. He's had a couple of hits, but he's had far more misses.
Is he considered, Ed, you know, as arrogant amongst other general managers around the league?
Like I said, he's a different cat. I don't know. I remember talking to one GM last season, and he said it started off that way. Gillis kind of views himself as an outsider, not part of the hockey establishment. And I think that, well, I know that rubbed some people the wrong way in the game. Seemed like he was more back, kind of back in the fold. excuse me, last year. But it's a tough one. It's a tough one to read. He certainly isn't part of the, you know, the mainstream, and I don't think he can pick up the phone and chat easily with a lot of guys. He's got some he's closer with than others, but, you know, it's a fair question.
We're joined on NHL Midweek by Ed Willis of the Vancouver Province. Ed, obviously the Sedins have struggled for yet another playoff series, you know, relatively insignificant in this series against San Jose. You know, sort of, what has happened to the Sedins, and are they still upper echelon NHL talent?
Well, they are in the regular season, and certainly, you know, the question has to be asked in the playoffs. I think a couple of things have happened. One, they've gotten a little older, but I think the larger issue it concerns, one, the way the game is played now, and two, the way it's called. Coming out of the lockout, it was a completely different game, and, you know, the skilled teams, Pittsburgh, Detroit, Carolina, who won the first Stanley Cup out of the lockout, we're all built along similar lines. Not terribly big, but fast and deep and skilled, and that's the way this Canucks team was built. And, you know, I think I'm writing about this today. Sometime in latter half of the 2010-2011 season, there was a sea change in the NHL, and the game started to become a lot bigger, a lot, and the word everybody uses in the NHL now is heavy, playing heavy. Uh-huh. And when you look at the teams, and of course the most graphic example of that is the St. Louis LA series, but Ottawa's built along those lines. Toronto tried to build themselves along those lines. I think the New York Rangers are along those lines. And that's the way the game is played. Now you need size. It's kind of muck it along the boards, get the back puck back to the point, throw it at the net, and then just whack away and hope you can find the back of the net. But skill and speed and skill isn't at the premium, and it was 3 years ago, and that hurts the Sedins.
Ed, last Monday when we did our Stanley Cup playoff preview, Richie and I both agreed that Vancouver definitely had the edge on defense, and a lot of people would probably argue that Vancouver has the best top four, or at least the top 3-4 defense in the league. But it was clear that in this series against the San Jose Sharks, that defense was exposed. What does this defense need?
It needs size. It needs size that can play, and it needs that definitive number one guy, you know, the ace of the staff, to use a baseball analogy. And most of the great teams have that Norris Trophy caliber defensemen. The Canucks have a lot of B-level, a lot of guys who are good twos and threes on a good team, but they don't have the Norris Trophy. They don't have the Drew Doughty. They don't have the Ryan Suter. They don't have the PK Suter. I mean, you know the guys that are clearly a cut above, the guys that you can play 25, 30 minutes a game and who really change things. And the other thing is they need some size back there. Most of their guys are kind of medium-sized, and that really... Again, trying to handle San Jose's bigger forwards, they got exposed, and it really showed up on the penalty kill.
And obviously, the inevitable question in goal, in terms of Roberto Luongo and Corey Schneider. Schneider's injury, I guess, made things a little more confusing in this playoffs, but they already were confusing for the outside, the people outside of Vancouver. In any event, what's next in terms of this off season, and I guess the other inevitable question is, you know, we think Luongo is going to be the guy to go, but is there a possibility, a significant possibility, that they would shop Schneider?
No, it's not a significant possibility, and that's, you know, they made the commitment to Schneider during the playoffs last year when they went to him in Game 3, and everything they did during this season suggested Schneider was the guy they were going to commit to. They think he's a star in the making in that position, and really for the last 6 weeks of the regular season, you know, before he got hurt, you could make the case he was one of the best two or three goalies in the NHL. So I think that they've kind of fixed their wagon to the Corey Schneider horse, and I think they're going to ride it. Is it possible? Yeah, I guess anything's possible, but Schneider's the guy they've committed to.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. We're joined by Ed Willis of the Vancouver Province. Ed, assuming Mike Gillis keeps his job, as we've speculated that he probably will, do you think that the managerial, the front office changes are as simple as Alain Vigneault being replaced, or is there anything else in the works that, you know, that he might do to try and sort of, you know, liven up the Vancouver Canucks situation?
Well, they kind of changed their sky. I mean, this is kind of, you know, intricate, only interesting to people in Vancouver stuff, but they did change their scouting staff a bit. I don't see them, you know, they've got their capologist, they've got their hockey guy in the front office in Lauren Henning. I don't see that happening. I think it'll be a real interesting choice if they go ahead and, you know, the presumption is they go ahead and replace Vigneault. So do they go with, like, a proven commodity, a veteran hand like Lindy Ruff, or, you know, because Gillis has sold himself as this, you know, iconoclastic singer, do they go outside the box and go after a Dallas Eakins or somebody who's, you know, kind of a rising star in the coaching ranks but doesn't have any NHL experience?
Ed, the last 2 years, the Canucks have gone out in the first round. Both years, they've won one game. Is there any apathy around this franchise and its fan base?
Oh, totally, yeah. I'm sorry, I don't recall them winning a game in the series against San Jose, but maybe that was just me. There was an unconditional love affair between this city and the franchise for... Well, the first 3 years Gillis was here, certainly, it changed, and all of a sudden, you know, the lockouts weren't the sellouts weren't a foregone conclusion, and they had trouble selling tickets during the playoffs, and that's going to be a real interesting one to follow here. This franchise has been bulletproof in this market for the last really 12 years, going back to 2001. And for the first time, there's a sense a little malaise was set in among the fan base. They're not quite as enthusiastic about what they've seen, and I think they're going to have to do something to get the attention back.
Final question, Ed. And we talk about, well, everybody's been really talking about what the Canucks are going to do to change things. Obviously, it was a disappointing exit. How much risk is there? And it doesn't seem like Mike Gillis is a guy to act necessarily quickly, as you mentioned earlier in the interview, but how much risk is there in blowing up the team just for the sake of blowing it up?
Well, I'm not sure if that option is there in today's NHL. It's just trades are so hard to make right now, and I just don't see them, you know, making these wholesale changes that everybody's talking about. If there is a big dramatic move, would be trading Ryan Kessler or Alex Edler and you know, trying to just change the mix in the locker room. And that would, Edler maybe, Kessler would absolutely stun me. But, I mean, that would be, like, the big move to make. The other thing, I just don't see it. Luongo isn't going to fetch enough of a return to materially alter your franchise. The other guys they have really aren't that much in demand, and they don't have much in the way of prospects because they've drafted abysmally for the last 5 years. So I'm just not sure where there's going to be. There will be changes, clearly. I'm just not sure if there's going to be these wholesale changes that some people envision.
Ed Willis of the Vancouver Province, thanks very much for joining us this evening on NHL Midweek. And I guess finally, after 2 years back in the NHL, you might get to see the Jets play the Canucks back in Winnipeg next year.
That would be a very exciting day for me, a very exciting day.
Thank you very much, Ed. Take care. Have yourself a good evening.
Okay, guys, all the best.
Take care. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Welcome back to TSN 1290. A big thank you to Ed Willis of the Vancouver Province for having just joined us. In case you missed any of that, Remus will have the show up for download a little bit later this evening. Update from New York, Ryan Clough makes his playoff debut for the Rangers. So he's in the lineup for the Rangers. Mark Stahl out of the lineup for the Rangers. A score update from Toronto as the Toronto Maple Leafs have scored in the first 10 minutes of the game. They have a 1-0 lead over the Boston Bruins halfway through the first period. Gentlemen, moving to the Montreal-Ottawa series, the Senators 3-1 lead. Before we look at the series big picture, last night, the first goal for the Senators after they were down 2-0. They didn't appear to have anything going for them whatsoever. Yeah. Controversial goal. Was it a kicking motion, in your opinion?
You know, Drew, I thought it was. Watching that game, flipping between that one and the Islanders-Pittsburgh game, which was actually the more exciting game.
Sure.
Did he intentionally kick the puck? We'll never know. But was that a kicking motion? I mean, to me, that was a kicking motion. So, as we talked about before on before we hopped on air, who really knows at this point in time? I don't think anybody does. I've heard other people say that this morning, but I mean the puck was there, and the foot moved forward, and the skate hit the puck, and the puck went in the net. I mean, if that's not a kicking motion,
short of the guy lining up a 50-yard field goal to kick the puck in, it's hard to say what is anymore.
Drew, I agree with Richie as far as it looking like it was a distinct kicking motion, and I believe Carey Fraser wrote on TSN that, and his opinion means a lot more than mine, because maybe not more than Richie's, but mine definitely. he was a former ref for many, many years, and he went over point by point. But Richie, on this point of this distinct kicking motion, I think this is important. This is more important than the Daniel Sedin hit in overtime, penalty.
Did he say it was a goal, by the way? Or
no, he said he didn't think it. He thought it was a kicking motion.
Okay. Carey Fraser, had he been the ref, would have ruled it no goal.
Yep. Carey Fraser said it should have been ruled off, but this distinct kicking motion thing, I think, is a problem. The wording of the rule and the interpretation of the rule, and Richie knows a lot more about this, in legal speak, but it seems like they're fixated on not reversing a call unless there's irreversible evidence. And to me, it looks like, okay, maybe it didn't look like, it was necessarily intent, but could you say that there wasn't intent? I mean, you look at the way it hits his skate, and his skate is moving forward.
Yeah.
So regardless if he really, when the puck is directed at you and you don't have much time to think, Mika Zibanejad, I don't think, was thinking, okay, the puck's coming, I better quickly kick it in. I don't think he was thinking that. But in another respect, I don't think that he avoided the puck. I mean, let's just say this. I mean, a lot of people, a lot of fans, and I mean, sure, fans, unfortunately, their voices aren't heard when you're talking about the NHL war room in Toronto. But the conversation around my water cooler today was that wasn't a goal. And when enough people are talking about it, it's possible they got that call wrong, and it's possible that the wording of the rule is the reason why they got the call wrong.
And you know what? Again, do I think that should have been a goal? No. And does that change the complexion of the series? I think percent it does.
Yeah.
Different than being down 3-0 with San Jose, Vancouver. But still, the Habs were up 2-1 after that. And they were up 2-1 with 35 seconds, whatever it was, to go before they scored with 20 seconds to go. Corey Conacher, before they lost their composure, started running around their own zone.
Montreal lost their composure.
Yeah.
And Ottawa tied it up with Corey Conacher.
You know what? Now Montreal's got all these injuries. But Montreal had a chance to win that game. Good teams finish that off. And they played a really good game for the first two periods. Galchenyuk was brilliant last night. He's going to be a real stud. We knew that before. But boy, he looked good back on the wing yesterday. But they couldn't close. And for as much as we've heard about Michel Therrien having changed, he doesn't appear to have changed. And you see Paul McLean, who can get emotional, but very rarely. But he seems to have... You mentioned the out-coaching, but he just seems to have a handle on the team better than Therrien, when things are necessarily going his team's way.
Well, bring it sort of back to Claude Noel and the Winnipeg Jets briefly. Fans are always on Claude Noel for he doesn't show enough emotion.
Yeah,
doesn't show enough emotion. Well, now you have a coach who's showing far too much emotion, and his team is losing their composure as a result. I mean, for the regular season, was Michel Therrien a different coach? Yeah, I think he probably was. He was more calm than he had been in his previous stints in Pittsburgh or in Montreal. But now where the pressure's really on and the spotlight is the brightest, he is just melting down in front of everyone's eyes.
Now, okay.
Today, his comments about Brian Gionta.
I didn't hear him.
His comments about Brian Gionta today, when he says that, when he had to inform Brian Gionta that he's out for the rest of the season, he says, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, my captain, was crying in my arms, sobbing at the fact that he couldn't play hockey for the rest of this year. Now, do you really think that happened, in that exact manner?
But
if it did,
but
why does he say it? And why does he come out and say it when it just seems like everything is lost at that point?
But part of this has to be in the players too, because you could say they lost the complete composure as after game three, and they completely were going. They were going crazy. But first two periods, first 50 minutes of last night's game, they were by far and away the better team and had reacted well. So maybe his team was reacting to him, and maybe.
But at the first sign of adversity yesterday, At the first sign of adversity, anything went the wrong way,
yeah.
they melted down.
I agree with you. But again, part of it has to be on the players. I think the coach has something to do with that, but also the players. And let's be honest here, too. Mark Bergevin, who's a cool cat. Man, he dresses well, eh?
Yeah, he does.
But, I mean, he's lost it a couple times here.
And you saw they showed sort of the side-by-side screen yesterday when they tied the game, when the Senators tied the game. And you had Murray on Brian Murray on Ottawa, and he almost restrained himself from cheering too loudly, from celebrating too much in the press box. And then they showed Mark Bergevin, and he's sort of, when they tie the game, he sort of slams his fist down and he storms out a little bit. And I don't, you know, obviously with the general managers, what happens up there, I don't think it really matters too much.
And I don't think emotion is bad. I actually think it's good. I don't think Claude Noel shows enough emotion. Do I think he needs to be running around like a chicken with his head cut off? No, but I don't think he shows enough emotion. And I like the Randy Carlyle emotion, to be honest. That's like the happy medium for me. And he's a fiery guy, but mm-hmm. he just knows when to handle it.
I think balance is a very important thing as far as showing your emotion. You mentioned, I think you both raised good points. I agree with Richie. I do think that Montreal controlled that game for 50 minutes, and then they let it get away. Now, is that a function of the fact that they're inexperienced? Think of the guys that are really driving this bus right now. You've got P.K. Subban, Brendan Gallagher, Alex Galchenyuk right there. There are other players as well. Thomas Plekanec, obviously Gionta's out. But those are three guys that haven't had any success in the playoffs. Carey Price, it's a big one here too. He hasn't had any success in the playoffs. It's not like Carey Price has got a Stanley Cup ring or anything like that. He's still trying to prove himself, and I'm disappointed with the way he's played, and I don't think that there's any chance they come back in the season.
Let me interrupt you just for a second there, Ezzy, because I think you make a very good point. You talk about how young and inexperienced the Canadiens players are, and young players will feed off of their leader, and the leader supposedly is the head coach, a lot more than a team of veteran players.
Brian Gionta's got a Stanley Cup. Michael Ryder's got a Stanley Cup. Yep. There aren't an overabundance of Stanley Cups on that roster. And you look at the Ottawa Senators, you've got Daniel Alfredson, you've got Chris Neal. These are guys that have been there before.
Mm-hmm.
Sergei Gonchar's been there before. I agree with Richie as far as Paul McLean having a grasp on his team. I look at this series as completely getting away from the Montreal Canadiens in Game 3. Yeah. To me, that series is over after that third game. Ottawa is now up 3-1, so obviously it's easy to say that now. But as far as I'm concerned, that series, that game was everything. That third game, Montreal, Richie said it, completely lost it. And, you know, they decided to resort to ruffian tactics, which is fine. I mean, you're trying to set a tone, Richie, ahead in Game 4. But, I mean, they blew it yesterday. I mean, they completely blew it. They had a chance to win it. And they're not to win three games right now with Carey Price questionable, with Brian Gionta out, I think is just a task that's too hard to overcome at this point.
I mean, you're talking about perspective too, Ezzy, and you're probably right about that. You're talking about perspective. I thought Montreal would win this series. I thought that their skill level overall would be too much for Ottawa. But, you know, I've underestimated Ottawa all year, and that's the team that I said I'd pick Paul McLean for my coach of the year before this series because he's been that good. And Carlson's obviously been a great addition on the back end, goes without saying. But Montreal, when they were playing the way they were yesterday and skating and using their speed and their lines of, you know, pressure and depth, that's when they're at their best. Composure is obviously an issue here. But in reality, this series should be tied 2-2 with Montreal having two of the last three games at home. But perspective is so important because I kind of think, you know, Paul McLean played up the whole we're the underdogs, and he's always going to do that as a 7 coach. But I thought Michel Therrien, who knows what he says in the room, mind you. We're not in the room. But I thought Michel Therrien could have said, hey, everybody pick us right out of the playoffs. We happen to be second. We're only a couple points ahead of Ottawa. This is anybody's game. And I thought he kind of, instead his tact was to take the pressure on. And I don't necessarily mind that. But in hindsight, you wonder if maybe he put too much pressure on not only his team, but his own shoulders.
You know, to me, from my perspective, Paul McLean has badly outcoached Michel Therrien. I think he's been the better of the two coaches. It hasn't really been very close. And what I don't understand is why, what has Paul McLean done that he's been so successful in getting under the skin of Michel Therrien?
Well, first
besides
off,
expressing a contrary opinion or not throwing his own players under the bus. I mean, did Michel Therrien really think that Paul McLean was going to come out and say that the Greiba hit was really dirty and boy, I wish my guy hadn't done that?
Fair enough.
And he stuck behind Eric Greiba. He stuck behind his players after that first game, after the second game. you know, it's tough to find anything not to like about Paul McLean at this point. Mm-hmm. They get into the playoffs, and now they're up 3-1 in the Montreal Canadiens. Everything's looking good. The thing that was so amazing to me about that third game, Patrick Wierkoch went down, and they only had 5 defensemen, and they still won. Yeah. I mean, everyone got lost in all of the melee and everything like that, and, you know, the fighting and everything like that. But he somehow manages to find the best out of his players. And, I mean, you go up and down the roster, and we talked about this, and you can go back and listen to the show. Not that you would, because it's a little bit old news right now. But I said, don't expect a high-scoring series. And this series is Ottawa's actually scoring some goals. Who expected Jean-Gabriel Pageau to get a hat trick? Kyle Turris gets the goal. He was struggling. You're getting goals from Mika Zibanejad, Jacob Silverberg. They're getting all these goals that they need with a guy like Jason Spezza out. It's unbelievable how he's getting all these performances out of guys that weren't exactly hot heading into the playoffs.
Pressure. There's no pressure in Ottawa. None. Now there's going to be a little pressure.
Well.
But I think Montreal, you know, the Giunta injury is huge. And I think Giunta injury is huge not only for 5-on-5, but for the power play. If you watch, I think yesterday they replaced him, I think, with Rene Bork. With Plekanec and Ryder, and we broke down the Montreal power play 2-3 weeks ago now, I think 3 weeks ago. Giunta's a really important part on the goal line and making the passes, and without him there, I noticed there's a discernible difference in terms of effectiveness. That's a factor. You know, Drew, you also talk about the coach, but what about the leaders of the team? Josh George is a pretty heart and soul, emotional guy. He lost it in Game 3. Mm-hmm. P.K. Subban is kind of losing it all the time.
His act is a clown act.
Yeah, it's a clown act.
His talent is unquestionable. His act is a clown act. And if you don't think it, I mean, I'm sure it drives opponents crazy. I bet you it drives his teammates crazy, too. We've heard before that he isn't the most popular guy in the dressing room.
Yeah, and that's been talked about in this series as well. And Andrei Markov, you know, and Subban, you wonder what the combination will be for game. You wonder if for game 5 if they're going to make some changes, you know, just in terms of the lines and such. The changes that Therrien made, though, Drew, give him some credit. The changes that he made for game 3 in terms of putting Halpern at center and putting Galchenyuk on the wing was a very successful change.
For 50 minutes, it absolutely was.
And they played Game 2 without Giunta and without Pacioretty. Yeah. And this team, again, should be tied 2-all. So, I mean,
if they had the more composure.
They have 2 of the next 3 games, if there are, of course, these games. They play at home. The Montreal fans can get them going. And if you get a lead on Ottawa, in theory, a team that has hard-pressed to score, you can get back in the series. It's not over yet. But they have but without Carey Price, it may be very difficult.
Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca, and NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 10 minutes before the top of the hour, coming up at 7 p.m., Arthur Staple of Newsday is going to join us to talk about the Penguins-Islanders series, which is unexpectedly tied at 2 games apiece. Update from Toronto. At the end of the first period, the Toronto Maple Leafs 2, the Boston Bruins 0, and the parade route has been planned for Bay Street accordingly. Yeah.
The Leafs are back.
The Leafs are back.
The Leafs are coming back.
Yeah.
It's one game, and 2 goals is probably the worst lead to have in hockey, so let's curb our enthusiasm a little bit.
Sounds reasonable. On TSN right now, about 5 minutes into the first period, is the Capitals-Rangers. The Caps lead that series 2-1. We mentioned Ryan Clough's return to the Rangers for this game, for Game 4. What does Ryan Clough's return mean for the Rangers' chances in the remainder of the season? This series.
Yeah, well, this series, you know, they're a desperate team right now against the Washington Capitals, down 2-1. Just like the Toronto Maple Leafs are right now, desperate teams can really turn it on unexpectedly. You know what? Ryan Clough is a guy who's had playoff success with the San Jose Sharks, and the New York Rangers went out before the trade deadline and got him for this exact reason. He's replacing Daryl Powell in the lineup. Daryl Powell hasn't had a lot of success with the Rangers this year. He hasn't been able to carry it over. Remember when he was on the Flyers and the Wild? He was a little bit better, but I think it adds, a grittiness and physicality and a guy that can also score. He didn't have any goals when he came over to the New York Rangers, but he was able to score a little bit in the 10 or so games or whatever that he played with the New York Rangers. And I think it is a little bit psychological when you have a guy like Clough coming into the lineup. He can really give you a boost. I really like the way the New York Rangers played. They only had 1 goal in the first 2 games in Washington, and they didn't play very well. They didn't. Henrik Lundqvist kept them in the game, and Brad Richards still doesn't have a goal or point, I believe, in the series yet. But Rick Nash passed that puck to Derek Stepan, and he got the game-winning goal. It was a beautiful pass. A guy like Rick Nash has to get going in order for this team to win the series. But I think it's, you know, very important for the Rangers to get a guy like Ryan Kloh back in the lineup. He missed some time, and I think it is going to give them a boost today. No score so far.
He gives him a size boost. So he doesn't skate as well as he used to. But sure, I mean, he's an upgrade over Darryl Powell, even if he's not at what he once was. And he's, as you mentioned, good in the playoffs. And he'll add some grit, and he goes to the net, and that's where they'll score goals. As you also mentioned, they haven't had much success scoring goals, got pretty good hands. So, yeah, I mean, that's a boost. The issue, of course, for the Rangers is there's no Mark Stahl.
That's a worse psychological impact than possibly having Ryan Kloh in the lineup. Right. What I mean by that is Mark Stahl played his first game, and I believe he was under 20 minutes. Maybe we can check that. I think he
was 17.
Yeah, he was around 17, so he didn't play normal Mark Stahl minutes, but Mark Stahl hasn't played since early March. So, I mean, Mark Stahl, you don't just put him in there and expect to, you know, the old Mark Stahl to come back. Now, we don't know if he's out because he's having vision issues or if something else came up. For those who don't know, he, of course, took the puck in the eye and missed 2 months of the regular season and the first two games of this series. And it would be really unfortunate if Mark Stahl is still experiencing vision problems or concussion problems. But having a guy like Mark Stahl in the lineup is an upgrade over really 98% of the players in the NHL. So that is a detrimental development in this game. And you have to hope that he's available for the future games in the series.
Moving on to the Pittsburgh Islanders series, which is tied 2-2, Game 5, of course, tomorrow on TSN. You know, do you think that the Penguins underestimated and overlooked the New York Islanders coming into this series?
Coming into the series, maybe not. After the first game in a bit, first game in the first 10 minutes of the second game, or whatever it was, yeah, probably. They probably thought they could write their ticket to the second round, and that hasn't been the case, you know. I was talking to our buddies in Australia, Jeff, and he's, you know, he hasn't really been following the NHL that closely, and he sends me a text saying, "When did the Penguins roster looks like something that a 13-year-old would assemble on, you know, PlayStation, playing yeah. NHL 2013. Because that's kind of what it is, and some of those holes are maybe becoming apparent, but I think really at the end of the day, if you're a Pittsburgh fan, you have to be concerned about this. This team is playing against a less talented group than they did last year in Philadelphia. But the same issues are coming to a head. The defense, breakdowns defensively as a five-man unit, and Marc-Andre Fleury, who of course is now being replaced for Game 5 by Thomas Vokoun. And I know you didn't have Vokoun last year, and he's certainly an upgrade over Brent Johnson. But if you're the Penguins fan, and you thought all year, they talked about we need to change, we need to be better in our own zone, we need to do this, because last year that's why we lost. And you play four games in the playoffs, and you essentially reverted back to it.
I have a few things to say here.
Please.
And
it's good that you're on the radio.
Yes, this is definitely the time and the place to say those things. I've watched every single minute of the first four games of the Pittsburgh Islanders series. That's right, I like hockey. And if there's one thing that I've noticed, let's forget the Marc-Andre Fleury's been brutal. I mean,
it's had to raise the price of beer.
We don't even need to talk about that. I mean, he arguably had the worst game of his professional career in Game 4, and that's why Thomas Vokoun's going to start. But the Pittsburgh Penguins almost seem to have too many guys coming in. I mean, James Neal and Brooks Orpik came into the lineup in Game 4 for the first game of this series. And Brooks Orpik is arguably their best defensive defenseman. And he didn't have a good game. And they were winning without those two guys in the lineup. And I look at this Pittsburgh Penguins defense, and this is not the 2009 team with Zdeněk Mihalik and Rob Scuderi and Hal Gill. Derek Englund, I've said this time and time again, is the weak link on that Pittsburgh Penguins defense. And then when they put him in there, they quickly take him out. And they had Ben Lovejoy earlier in the year, and they traded him to the Anaheim Ducks. Simon Dupre's come in. He hasn't played well. Chris Letang has struggled, and he's the pillar of that defense. But you can't blame everything on Marc-Andre Fleury. He hasn't played well. He definitely deserves a lot of... He has to bear the brunt of some of these losses here against the New York Islanders. But you look at John Tavares, the goal that he scored in Game 4, He takes a shot and gets the rebound. Evgeny Malkin
What's
falls.
What's Malkin doing there?
But... He falls down. Brooks Orpik's out of position. Jerome Iginla's out of position. They haven't played tight defensively. And to be honest with you, I think they might have taken the New York Islanders a little bit lightly. Now, the series is tied. It's a best of three going back to Pittsburgh. They easily could have won that game and be up 3-1 going back to Pittsburgh. If Marc-Andre Fleury plays like the usual Marc-Andre Fleury. I don't think that
The Islanders could have won game three in overtime.
I truly believe that Marc-Andre Fleury is struggling from confidence issues based on last year's series. I do think that is rearing its ugly head. I still think he's a good goaltender, but I think...
How does he get his confidence back?
I think in the back of his mind, Drew, he's thinking about last year, because last year, remember, he was a lot worse than he was in this series against Philadelphia. And we're starting to see that again. And you have to think that that's in the back of his mind. And I don't think that, you know, Dan Bylsma is necessarily going to go with Vokoun for the rest of the playoffs.
What?
I think this is more so get him back in the lineup and see how he responds. I do think they will win Game 5. But the Pittsburgh Penguins have not played well defensively. So it doesn't all just rest on Marc-Andre Fleury.
And what, you know, one thing that concerned me a little bit at the trade deadline was that this team added Doug Murray, Brendan Morrow, and Jerome Iginla. And they got considerably slower. And the Islanders are a bad matchup in that respect because the Islanders can skate. So the three guys that they added, while they match up great against Boston, who they're probably inevitably going to have to face in, well, not probably, but very, very possibly have to face to go through and win the cup or go to the cup. They would have to face a Boston team that's big and strong that wears you down. You know, kind of similar to the St. Louis LA series, which we'll talk about a little bit later in the show. But Doug Murray's not a good skater. Jerome Iginla doesn't skate like he once did, and he's, you know, he's a big guy still to get around. And Brendan Morrow's not a great skater. He's really slow. So that has not necessarily been a great matchup for them. And the Islanders are going to keep trying to skate and skate and skate. And if you're able to skate and create chances, and the one other thing, because I know we got to go to break here, Drew.
Yes, we do.
There are not many players in the NHL who are as good as John Tavares. But the Penguins, if Brooks Orpik can't shut him down, who on that defense can shut him down?
And just quickly, that second line with Kyle Okposo and Josh Bailey, Franz Nielsen have taken advantage of Paul Martin and Douglas Murray as well. So
who can shut down Tavares, though, like, out of those defensemen?
None of them right now. And we'll talk to Arthur Staple of Newsday about it coming up after these commercial messages. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290. One hour to go. Welcome back to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
The TSN 1290 NHL Midweek Hotline.
We welcome to NHL Midweek our good friend Arthur Staple from Newsday in Long Island. Arthur, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
Always a pleasure, guys.
Arthur, Game 5 tomorrow night in Pittsburgh. You know, how surprised are you that this series is tied at two games apiece?
I think beforehand, you know, before we all got started, I don't think there'd be anybody out there who maybe thought it would be tied, and I certainly don't think you could find anybody who thought it would be tied. The manner in which it's gotten to be tied, just goals everywhere, you know, another strange goaltending performance from Marc-Andre Fleury, a strange absence of intestinal fortitude by the Penguins blowing leads in the last three games. And, you know, from my perspective, following the Islanders around all year, it's maybe not that surprising the way that they've been able to you know, stay in games. They've been that kind of team all this shortened season long, especially over the last month. They've been able to stay in games, to play close games and not seem rattled when they fall behind by a goal or two. So where they are right now, I don't think it surprises them, but maybe the guys in that room are the only ones who aren't completely surprised.
Arthur, in Newsday, you reported that Isles defenseman, Andrew McDonald, is done for the season, done for the playoffs. Two-part question, how are they going to deal with the loss of McDonald, who played a lot of minutes on defense, and who's going to go in the lineup tomorrow night versus Pittsburgh?
Yeah, it was a broken hand, and, you know, it's an unfortunate blow, and I think a lot of people don't really see the minutes that Andrew McDonald plays. He's not the biggest guy. He's not the most flashy guy, but he blocks a lot of shots. He's very sound positionally in his own zone. He's not going to rough anybody up, but he He's good with his stick, and he's good with his body, and he's definitely going to be a guy that they miss. So I think Thomas Hickey will probably go in for him, maybe not directly in on that top pair with Travis Hamonic. I would guess that either Mark Streit or Brian Strait will probably fill that spot. You know, the coaches have really liked what Brian Strait has brought to the team since they picked him up off waivers from the Penguins. You know, he had a broken ankle that cost him a couple of months of this season, and he was not quite as condition level ready when he came back at the end of the regular season, but I think you've seen the last couple of games, he's kind of gone right at Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, kind of gotten in their face. He had a big goal, his first NHL goal the other night, and frankly, he's a, you know, he's kind of a, you know, a towny Bostonian who really wants to stick it to the Penguins for letting him go, so he's got a little personal motivation too, so I think you may see him move up to that that top pair spot with Hamonic, but Thomas Hickey will probably be in. I think Radek Martinik is a consideration, too, to maybe fill in for Matt Kartner if they want a little bit more stick handling, a little more speed off the bat. But definitely it's going to be a big loss with McDonald out.
Arthur, some have questions about the Penguins' defense. Do they have anybody who can shut down John Tavares?
I don't think so. I don't think so. It's been a bit of a surprise to me that, you know, the Penguins, they added Douglas Murray, and they wanted a little bit more, you know, snarl back there. They picked up Mark Eaton, who had been with the Islanders and had been with the Penguins prior in their Stanley Cup year. And, you know, Mark's a very sound guy at the back end, but he's not able to really keep up with faster, younger guys. So, you know, Brooks Orpik came back into the lineup, and he was out there a bit against Tavares, but he's, you know, his conditioning is a little bit off being gone for the last couple of weeks. So, you know, and frankly, the problem, I think, is that it's not just Tavares, it's Kyle Pozo. You know, the Islanders really have two bona fide star-level players who have that determination, and they go into the corners and they come out with the puck, and when they have the puck, they're a threat. And having them on separate lines has really opened a lot of things up for the Islanders, and I think put the Penguins back on their heels quite a bit in the series.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. We're joined by Arthur Staple of Newsday in Long Island. Arthur, you mentioned Kyle Okposo, obviously very familiar to fans here in Winnipeg, especially given the run-in he had with Zach Bogosian towards the end of the year. On the sort of bigger scale in the entire NHL, would you classify the first four games of this series as his coming out party?
Oh, I think so. I think so. I think, you know, the inconsistencies that have plagued him since he had shoulder surgery that cost him half of the 2010-11 season that really started to fall by the wayside. And really with him, confidence was always the biggest issue the last couple of years. He had very slow starts for the last two seasons, you know, one prior to this and this one. You know, he was thought to be that guy who was going to become a 30-35 goal scorer, and it really hasn't materialized. Even when he was going well this season, he was more of a playmaker first and a scorer second. But just the forcefulness with which he's playing, and you know the willingness to step up in any situation. I think, you know, if the Islanders can manage to pull off the upset here, a lot of guys in that room will point to his fight with Matt Niskanen in the second period of Game 2 as the thing that not only turned that game around, but perhaps turned their fortunes around, where they saw a guy who'd never fought before in the NHL, who's a slow burn kind of guy, just jump in the, you know, and with both feet into the occasion and into the moment, and seize it. And it's really, you know, paid dividends not only for the team, but for Kyle as well, you know, with goals in the last three games. Not the prettiest of goals necessarily, throwing him in from off the end boards or bouncing him off the end boards and off of Marc-Andre Fleury, but he's a guy that confidence is a huge factor for him. He's still only 25, but he's really shown the entire NHL that he was worth that first-round pick back in 2007.
Arthur, this afternoon, Penn's head coach Dan Bylsma announced that Thomas Vokoun was going to be his starter for Game 5 after Marc-Andre Fleury let in 6 goals in Game 4. Do you think that this is a strategic move by the Penguins? And can you also talk about how Thomas Vokoun has had a lot of success against the New York Islanders during the regular season as well in that answer?
Vokoun was good against the Islanders this season. You know, I think you have to throw that out a little bit just because the way these games have gone, they're so wide open and wild that, you know, Vokoun was playing behind a much different team, I think, during the regular season that he's playing behind right now. He's playing behind a team that's questioning itself a little bit and you know, questioning their gaudy regular season record, much as the same thing that happened with them last season. But this move is, you know, it's a bold one. I think it's Dan Bylsma saying we're not thinking about the future. We're not trying to be calculating and think 10 moves ahead or worry about people's emotions and feelings. It's we got to win a hockey game, and we got to win another hockey game and try to get out of the series intact, and then we'll think about what we need to do beyond that. So Thomas Lacoon is, you know, is a veteran guy. He's been around a long time. He doesn't have the best playoff history, but and he certainly hasn't played in a couple of weeks. But this was a situation where I think a lot of the players on that team have lost faith that Marc-Andre Fleury that can be a guy who can stand in and make the big save this time of year. So this is desperation from the Penguins, and I think maybe if the Islanders view it that way, they can play into their favor, that they can maybe, you know, surge and realize the Penguins are stressing out a little bit.
Arthur, how much money is Mark Strait making for himself so far this postseason?
Well, I think he was already pretty much on his way to a big payday regardless. You know, he's a guy who's, his offensive skills his offensive skills certainly have not dimmed. He's still a good guy on the power play, still an effective power play quarterback. Maybe his 5-on-5 skills have been the thing that's diminished a little bit, but I think when GMs are looking for that big name free agent, especially when the defense market might be very thin, they're seeing a guy who still puts up 40 points a year or prorated 40 points for the 48-game season. He's a guy who scores 2 goals in a playoff game, a guy who's a very quiet, very steady leader to this Islanders team. I had thought that there was a chance after this playoff run was done that the Islanders and Mark Strait could come to some sort of agreement, but I don't see his number coming down, and I think it's only going up. So, yeah, he was probably a $5 million a year for 3 years guy on the open market. Maybe you were creeping up into 5.5 or 5.75, which is definitely out of Garth Snow's league as far as what he wants to pay for a veteran defenseman like that.
You're listening to TSN 1290. We're joined by Arthur Staple of Newsday talking about the Penguins-Islanders series. Arthur, how would you rate Jack Capuano's head coaching debut in these playoffs?
I think he's been about as good as some of his players who have debuted in these playoffs. You know, he's a guy who's been very hesitant to change things up. He's also a very superstitious guy, but I think even on the front where some of his lines had been struggling, the Tavares, Matt Molson, Brad Boyes line, which was together pretty much this entire season, really started to struggle down the stretch. They were completely invisible in game one, much like the rest of the Islanders. And I think he made the bold playoff move to swap Matt Molson off of John Tavares' wing, where he's been for pretty much the entire time that John Tavares has been in the NHL, with Molson, with Frans Nielsen and Okposo. And, it's worked out well. I think Frans Nielsen was saying he's looking more for Matt Molson in front of the net. They're trying to get more pucks on net where Molson hangs out. And Tavares is freed up by having Josh Bailey on his wing. Bailey's a little bit more of a playmaker, a little bit more of a guy who commands more attention in the open ice, which is good for Tavares. And, you know, it seems like one simple little thing, but Capuano made a bold move, certainly for him. And, since then, the Islanders' offense has just really opened up.
Arthur, you were in Winnipeg for both games between the Jets and Islanders, and I remember that because 5 members of a legal curve were bugging you up in the press box. But in those 2 games, Travis Hamonic and Evander Kane were going at it, and it seemed like Hamonic was getting in Kane's head. Do you think that Travis Hamonic has gotten into Evgeny Malkin's head a little bit?
I think a little bit. I think it's certainly no secret around the NHL that Evgeny Malkin can be physically distracted from his incredible gifts. People are tough on him and physical on him. He maybe hangs his head a little bit. He certainly doesn't have great body language at times when he's not going well. And it's been Travis Hamonic. You know, Colin McDonald laid him out with an open ice hit last night and then threw a penalty on him. They know that there are guys that they have to be physical with. Crosby is one of them. Malkin is one of them. Malkin is, he's produced 8 points in this series already. He's made some incredible plays. He's certainly gotten open a lot when he shouldn't have. But that fight at the end of game four with Hamonic and Malkin, Hamonic has made it his mission. He's a guy who, he talks in a rather gleeful fashion about wanting to be a guy who rises to the occasion in the playoffs. And for him, that means being physical, knocking Sidney Crosby down, knocking Evgeny Malkin down, and making sure that those guys remember who he is. So I think he's succeeded in that so far.
Final question, Arthur. I mean, all of us in the studio have had the occasion of being at Nassau Coliseum, albeit for a Jets game in November, so a little bit different atmosphere. It seems like the place is just rocking. Can you talk about the atmosphere in the arena and maybe when the last time it was this crazy?
It's been a long time. You know, it's 6 years since the last playoff game, but I think that team that made the playoffs in 2007 looked a lot different than this team. This is a team that, you know, the fans know is a team that's on the rise, and this is really just the beginning of what this team can accomplish. So that has really added to the raucous atmosphere, and it's funny, you know, I had a conversation with Colin McDonald, who's a guy who grew up in the New England area. His dad played a little bit for the Hartford Whalers in another small but raucous building when Hartford was there at the Civic Center in Hartford. And Colin McDonald made a good point, which is, you know, people denigrate the Nassau Coliseum. When it's empty, it looks old, it's run down, the concessions aren't very good. But when you get in a situation like this, there's no luxury suites at you know, on the ice level. There's no corporate atmosphere. It's hardcore fans from the first row up to the last row, and that really has made a huge difference. And every player in the room has said what a big change it's been for them to experience the Coliseum at that incredible decibel level and incredible passion that that this group of Islander fans that have stuck with them through a lot of bad times the last 20 years has really brought to these last two games. And I think winning that game four and ensuring that there's going to be another, at least one more game at the Coliseum, playoff game at the Coliseum this week, you know, has really got those guys pumped up, and I'm sure it's got the fans of Long Island pumped up.
Our good friend Arthur Staple from Newsday. Arthur, thanks very much for doing this, and, you know, best of three, so it could be anyone's ball game at this point.
Gentlemen, anytime. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Arthur. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290. 20 minutes past 7 o'clock. Welcome back to NHL Midweek. Our final NHL Midweek for this season. We will, of course, still be with you Saturday afternoons from 12 to 3. Here on TSN 1290, but with the Winnipeg Goldeyes, our good friend Paul Edmonds. You guys were at the ballpark for the open house this past Saturday.
So much fun. I got to say right now, big thanks to Paul Edmonds.
Yes.
Reem, if you want to play a little background music, I have no problem with that. Because
that
you
Fox,
were at
is that
Shaw
Foxy
Park.
Lady?
There we go. Dave Minuk was there as well. Big shout out to Paul Edmonds. He's the best in the business. Class act. Goldeyes general manager Andrew Collier. Everybody, for treating us, you know, to another. That's our second year of doing that, and it's unbelievable. You've got baseball. I hope we do it every year because it's so much fun. But it's a little sad that this is going to be our last midweek show. We've done it for, what, 3 months? Not that long, but it's been fun. But I guess we're going to have to go back to our bread and butter Saturday.
It is our bread and butter, I'm sure, and we will be there on Saturday throughout the summer in its entirety.
Or for Richie, for Drew, it's cream cheese and butter.
Yeah. anyways, we will be, of course, with you all Saturday,
Remus,
all
why?
Summer long.
Why Foxy Lady when we talked about the Goldeyes there?
It's Purple Haze.
Yeah.
The Purple Haze, sorry.
Yeah, it's
right.
Not Foxy Lady.
So, but why Purple Haze?
Oh, I just wanted some music while we're, you know, not talking about hockey.
Can we start talking about hockey again, and you can turn the music down?
Okay. I turn it down, and then go back to the series-by-series, team-by-team.
There you go. A score update from the two games that are underway.
You're going to go back to Tim soon with that attitude.
The Toronto Maple Leafs were up 2-0 at the end of one in Toronto, and before the platinum seat holders could get back in their seats
and finish their sushi.
Yeah, 28 seconds into the second period, Patrice Bergeron gets the goal. Assist to Zdeno Chara and Milan Lucic. It was actually 32 seconds. I apologize to the platinum seat holders. But it's now 2-1 Toronto over Boston, 8 minutes into the second period. In New York, the Rangers have a 1-0 lead over the Capitals. Braden Holtby came out to play the puck. Tried to rifle it up the center of the ice, a very skillful eye-hand coordination play by the Rangers player to knock it down. Takes a big slap shot, blocked by John Carlson because Holtby is completely out of the play at this point. Rebound goes back to Brad Richards, and Brad Richards finally gets on the scoreboard just after you had said he hadn't scored all series. You must be a good luck charm for him. 1-0 Rangers over the Capitals at the end of one.
We should mention, Richie, on that point, Braden Holtby is actually not bad at playing the puck. He's actually pretty good at it, as opposed to Jonathan Quick. I feel for Braden Holtby. You got to feel for those guys sometimes when that stuff happens. Jonathan Quick, it's been documented, he's not good at playing the puck. That's his Achilles heel, and it obviously reared its ugly head on that overtime goal where Alex Steen scored the winner. That was game one of that series. But Braden Holtby comes out, and he just made a mental mistake. You got to feel for him, because that's not the time to come out and start making those passes. So Rangers are up 1-0. As we talked about, this is a must-win for them. Going back, down 3-1, back to Washington, I don't like their chances. They're desperate. I just love the way, though, that Derek Stepan's been playing. He's the guy, to me, that's been their best forward in the series. He almost put them ahead 2-0 right after that goal. But Brad Richards definitely gets off the schneid with that goal.
That's very true. Let's talk about the Bruins-Leafs series. It's on, of course, in the studio here, so we're watching it as we talk about it. A lot of chatter entering this game about the face-offs and the situation with the face-offs and who's cheating with the face-offs. Is anybody cheating? And there's back and forth and lots of, you never heard that many people talk about face-offs for that long.
It's got to be playoffs if we're talking about face-offs. I love it. Elliot Friedman is on CBC. We've had him on the show a bunch of times. Love Elliot. He's referencing that website, that face-off website. They're breaking down every single face-off with ice. Oh, no, sorry, pardon me. That was actually ice time. But they're actually breaking down the ice time and each single face-off. Face-offs are important here. But let's be honest. They're not everything. Possession is big, but, I think it's almost a little bit overstated about the face-offs.
Is there a legitimate gripe to the way the linesmen have been calling the face-offs in this series? And has it been any different than all year where we've been complaining about them to just drop the puck?
Not really. People need stuff to talk about now, especially with Toronto and Boston media being involved in this series. I think overall, Drew, in terms of the actual on-ice play, the Leafs succeed when they use their speed and when their best players are their best players, and that's not exactly some kind of a foreign recipe for success. When they won in Game 2, they relied on James Van Riemsdyk, Joffrey Lupo, and Phil Kessel to provide the offense.
Those are the only guys that have scored.
I know, but those are their best guys, and they're going to only win that way. They aren't the deepest team. Randy Carlyle's a heck of a coach. We know that. James Reimer has to be really good for them to win. Right now, obviously, they're up 2-1 in the middle of the second here, but there's a lot of emotion behind this Toronto team, as obviously there is with Boston, especially in light of the tragedy. But we were in Toronto, Drew and I, obviously, during the this past weekend, as you and you hosted on Saturday. And I mean, I was there at Real Sports Bar, which is an amazing sports bar.
I bet you had a real good time.
I had a real, real good time.
He really can't remember it.
It was owned by MLSE. We won't speak about that. It's owned by Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. It's connected to the Air Canada Centre, and it's just a
voted the best sports bar in North America.
But when you see when you see on the TV, them showing the screen and the fans outside, that's right outside Real Sports in the Air Canada Center. But that energy is palpable, seemingly to Boston. How when the Leafs won that game two, the streets of Toronto, I'm not exaggerating, were like they won a deep in the playoff series, not the cup, but a deep in the playoff series, and it was one game. So The fans have been clamoring for that playoff hockey, and I do think the players have fed off it for the most part. They fed off that, and they fed off Randy Carlyle's leadership. Are they as talented as Boston? No, and that's why I don't think they're going to win the series. But they're certainly not going out with a whimper. They're not going out Vancouver Canucks style here. And I think their talent is going to win out at the end of the day, but if they continue to use their speed against a bigger team that plods a little more like Boston, they have a chance to give them a little bit of a scare here.
I agree with that. They're not going out with a whimper. They're badly outmatched. They're getting beat bad in the faceoff circle. Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci, 1-2 down the middle, are arguably the best in the league. You could make a good argument, Richie, for the Chicago Blackhawks, the Pittsburgh Penguins. You could also make a good argument that the Boston Bruins up the middle are better because of the versatility. Those guys are both good two-way players, especially Patrice Bergeron. I think Patrice Bergeron really deserves Hart Trophy consideration.
Yep, fair enough.
We'll see if he gets it, but he's on that list, or he's in the conversation. You can make a strong argument. Similar argument to Andrew Ladd, better player than Andrew Ladd, but same two-way game. And the Boston Bruins dominated the Toronto Maple Leafs in Game 3, and they're up 2-1 right now in Game 4. But the Toronto Maple Leafs, and we talked about this before, and Richie touched on it a little bit here, they almost have to play a perfect game to beat the Boston Bruins in a 7-game series, almost a perfect game to beat the Boston Bruins in one game. And if they don't get scoring from their main guys, it's not even a conversation. Mike Koskinen's out. They haven't gotten really good defense from the second pairing of Cody Franzen and Mark Fraser, or Cody Franzen, whoever's out there with him. Phaneuf and Gunnarsson have actually done a pretty good job of shutting down that top line. Patrice Bergeron just got his first goal of the series.
Entering tonight's game, Bergeron, Sagan, and Marchand have combined for one point.
But that second line of Krejci, Horton, and
Lucic
have been absolutely dominant.
Is the depth going to be, at the end of the day, the difference?
I think so, Drew. And you know, when they beat Boston that night, Ferentz was out. Seidenberg went from playing with Chara, which he didn't play throughout basically the last few years. He's been playing with him for the most part. Lately, he plays on the wrong side. He goes from the right to the left. And he was a minus three that game. They took advantage of him. He got spun around. You know, the likes of Wade Redden there as well. When you get Ferentz back, not only is he a steadying presence and he does everything pretty solid, he's solid in pretty all in all aspects of the game, that's been a nice steadying force for them.
And Richie, I think, you know, it's 2-1 Toronto right now in the second period, and about 60 minutes or so from now, if the game ends in regulation, but, you know, later tonight we're going to find out, you know, if this is going to be a series or not, because if Boston goes up 3-1, I think we'd all agree this series is going to be over in five or six games. But I think what we're seeing here in this series especially is that when you look at your best players, Phil Kessel is Toronto's best player, best forward especially. But probably best player. But I think what you're seeing is he's got two goals in the first four games. And I don't think he's necessarily played bad. But Chara, for the most part, has shut him down. And I think what you see is when you've got really a one-line team, and this applies to the New York Islanders as well, I don't think that Phil Kessel is at the same level as John Tavares. And that might be obvious. But I think when you're talking about Phil Kessel, he hasn't played bad, but Chara is essentially shutting him down for the most part. Sure, when Chara's not on the ice, Phil Kessel, you know, got that goal, and he's had a couple goals, and he's been okay. But I think that even with Phil Kessel scoring, you know, a goal a game, I don't think that's enough. I really don't. I think you need a guy to take over a game. I don't think Phil Kessel has that in him.
Tavares makes other players around him better, and he's better at that than Kessel. The other point is this. We talked about this, actually, at the end, right before the trade deadline, and or a little bit earlier than that. It was that Dougie Hamilton, who played it generally for the most part this year, played a top four role for this team. We said here that he likely wouldn't be relied on by Claude Julien when it mattered most, because Claude Julien is reticent to trust young players. And in these playoffs, he hasn't relied on a guy like Dougie Hamilton. And what that's done is elevate other defensemen into a top four role. And I think that's not going to necessarily be a problem against Toronto. But against deeper teams, they're going to have trouble with that top four group in Boston.
Before we go to break, 2-2 Boston just scored.
Who is it?
Literally a second ago.
Brad Marchand.
Brad Marchand with the goal, so the top line for the Bruins is beginning to heat up. First it was Bergeron, then it was Marchand. It's 2-2 between Toronto.
I think it was Krejci.
Might have been Krejci,
and Boston. Was it Krejci?
Marchand was in there. It was a rebound. Okay. Could have been Krejci.
There you go. Anyways, 2-2 there. Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290.
Oh, no, I think it was Marchand.
Looks like they officially gave the Bruins' second goal to David Krejci, so it's 2-2 there between Boston and Toronto. Still in the intermission with the game on TSN between the Rangers and the Caps, but the Rangers have a 1-0 lead. Going to talk about the Kings-St. Louis series. That'll be later tonight, Game 5, played back in St. Louis. Before we talk about the series, what do you think about these late starts for the Central Time Zone? They've been doing it for the Minnesota-Chicago series and the home games for St. Louis.
I love it. Why are any games on? Why would they have any games on at the same time if they can help it? So you start in Minnesota at 8:30 or at 8, and Chicago at 8:30. Let people see the players that they wouldn't always see. Excuse me. And in reality, so it's an hour later to go to bed. The atmosphere in there, they have a little bit more to drink. It's a little bit more raucous. I think it's great. I think the NHL has finally taken the NBA's advice and started having their games on at different times as much as possible.
Again, I agree with Richie. Here, this is a perfect situation where you stagger the games so that more people get to watch it on TV. And think about it too. Minnesota, there was some Winnipeggers that went down to Minneapolis, St. Paul to watch the game. But think about it. Now you're waiting for the game. It starts a little bit later, but now your game is more of a focal point, so you know that more people are watching on TV. It builds the buzz, builds the excitement. The game's only starting, what, an hour, hour and a half after it would have, quote-unquote, normally started, 7 o'clock in the Central time zone. I think it's a great idea, and it's been nice because, I mean, even with your laptop and everything, you can't watch, really appreciate three hockey games at once, right?
It's actually ironic in that in the States, you've been able to watch every single game in its entirety on a physical channel, not necessarily on a laptop right. or a tablet. But every game has either been on NBC or NBC Sports Network yep. or CNBC or the NHL Network. Every game in its entirety is available somewhere on a television station, but that's not necessarily the case in Canada, where if you want to watch, say, Kings St. Louis later on, Toronto-Boston might not necessarily be over before that BBC, so you'd have to go to watch it on your laptop or whatever. Mm-hmm. Just another way they're obviously trying to boost the presence of the NHL in the United States. Separate issue for another day and time in more detail. Looking at the Kings-St. Louis series, through the first four games, is this the most evenly matched series of the first round?
Yeah, I mean, Drew, this is a coin flip series, and these teams are beating each other up. I'm tired watching this series. I mean, every single time a guy touches a puck, he is getting hammered. I mean, you saw Ryan Reeves went to touch the puck. He's a big boy, and Robin Regier almost ran him out of the building. They're going at Doughty hard. This is a man's game, and you have to wonder if these guys are going to be able to sustain it. Never mind past the next round, but even in the next round, whoever gets out of here, because everybody's so big, everybody's so mean, and the coaches are harping on the same things.
This is, as far as I'm concerned, this has been the best series. The only bad thing about this series is it's tough to stay awake when those games are in L.A. after you've watched all this hockey. That's the only bad thing, but as far as the actual on-ice product, this series has been unbelievable, and it's got some great storylines that aren't necessarily revolving around suspensions. It's just about the individual battles. You have St. Louis winning the first two games, and then the Kings responding with two wins in L.A., and the L.A. Kings giving up that lead in Game 4, but then coming back. Dustin Penner's been good. He seems to turn it up in the playoffs. Doesn't seem to be a really good regular season player, but he turns it up in the playoffs. But Richie really nailed it, and Matt Green, I think, might be out, so you might see another guy get into the lineup. Alec Martinez didn't play and then was back. I know Remus talked about Alec Martinez. He's a guy that Remus really likes. He was back in the lineup, and he's played pretty well. But the LA Kings, to me, really, I think, are going to win this series and eventually prevail, even though St. Louis has retained home ice advantage, but tonight is huge. It's a best-of-three series, just like Pittsburgh against the Islanders. But I think guys like Jeff Carter and Mike Richards are waking up. This team is built for the playoffs. And I think that I'm not saying that the LA Kings are going to repeat. I picked the LA Kings to go to the Western Conference Finals against Chicago. But I just think that they gave up. They lost the first two games. Now they're waking up a little bit. Because this is essentially, with the exception of a few players, this is pretty much the same team as last year's Cup winners. And I think those first two games really woke them up. And I think they're going to win the next two games.
Still a coin flip, I think. As you know, I had the Kings. I had the Kings going far, but who really knows? I mean,
right.
It's just one turnover here, one turnover there. And you know, if you're the Blues, you have to be really disappointed about giving up leads, especially in Game 4 there. But, well, there goes Boston.
If you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, you have to be really disappointed about giving up a two-goal lead, as David Krejci just scored to make it 3-2 for the Bruins over the Leafs. The comeback is complete, and the parade route has been canceled.
There's one thing, you know, in terms of that.
Still a period to play, though.
They can start it and stop it at any time they want.
The LA-St. Louis game, to me, one of the most interesting parts of that game was after two periods, St. Louis was up 3-2 going into the third period of Game 4, up 2-1 in the series, really having the Kings and their backs up against the wall. It was at the end of the period, and I saw Richards and Carter were chatting with, I forget who they were going back and forth with somebody. Might have been Backus. And it was the looks on the faces of Richards and Carter. They were trash talking, and they had a swagger on their face. And I actually fell asleep. I didn't see the third period. I watched the highlights and such.
That's what I'm talking about. It's tough to stay awake here with these. We're getting older,
well,
Richie.
I was traveling that day too, What I'm trying to get at is, down 3-2, defending Stanley Cup champion, going into the third period, Game 4 at home, instead of feeling the pressure, what I saw from them in that moment was those two guys exuding confidence. And I wasn't shocked when I woke up in the morning to see that they had won 4-3, because if I looked at their faces at that moment, I would have said, you know what, these guys are going to win this game. And when you don't panic and when you have confidence in yourself, and Daryl Sutter has instilled that, and he has that himself.
At least just hide it.
You know, what that does to me is it gives me a certain feeling that this team, hey, you know, this team is not going to go away quietly, and nothing really phases them.
I think you make a really good point, Richie. And Jonathan Quick was terrible in that first game, especially on that giveaway.
Well, good in the game, just terrible at the end.
Terrible at the end. And Mike Richards and Jeff Carter are guys that have won the world championships. Mike Richards has been to the Olympics. They won the Stanley Cup last year. Mm-hmm. Those are really, and Dustin Brown obviously deserves some credit for that. But those are guys that you feel like in the dressing room, those are kind of the guys, along with even like a guy like Jarrett Stoll, Dustin Penner. Those guys are almost driving it a little bit more than Anze Kopitar and Dustin Brown, who we know from what guys like Jim Fox have said on the show, he's not really the loudest guy, Dustin Brown. He's a guy that's physical on the ice. But those are, I think you've touched on something, though. This is a team that has swagger. A guy like Drew Doughty, he's younger. Oh, yeah. He's got some swagger to him. This LA Kings team, I think, if they get past the St. Louis Blues, they are going to be the one team that gives the Chicago Blackhawks the most run, the run for their money, to be honest with you.
As I mentioned, the Leafs tied it up. Clark MacArthur with the goal for the Leafs, 3-3 in Toronto between the Bruins and the Maple Leafs.
Parade route back on.
Either the Kings or the Blues, whoever gets out of that series is now granted. Whoever wins that series, San Jose is going to play Chicago in the next round, depending on the results of the Detroit-Anaheim
series.
But they can't play. The Kings at St. Louis now cannot play Chicago in the second
round. And when you look at the I know we might be overlooking the Anaheim Ducks a little bit or the San Jose Sharks, but you look at I would, again, compare the defense on the L.A. Kings or the St. Louis Blues up against the Ducks or the Sharks, and I'd say they get the advantage there.
Agreed. You mentioned, before we go to break, how evenly matched the series is through four games. Each team has 7 goals for, 7 goals against. When we come back, we'll talk about the Detroit-Anaheim series and the Chicago-Minnesota series. You're listening to NHL Midweek, and we're live on TSN 1290. One final segment on this Wednesday evening, the final NHL Midweek show for this hockey season. We'll still be with you Saturday afternoon, 12 noon until 3 p.m. here on TSN 1290. Two more series to talk about. Let's start with the Detroit-Anaheim series. That series is tied 2 games apiece. Game 5 goes tonight, I believe, in Anaheim.
Yep. Yeah, it does.
You know, at the start of this, when we previewed that series, we said that the team that's going to win the series is the team that's going to shut down the opposition's top players.
Mm-hmm.
So far, the top line for the Anaheim Ducks, they have 8 points total. The top line for the Detroit Red Wings, they have 8 points total. Mm-hmm. Is that emblematic of how close this series is?
2-0, going back to Anaheim. Yeah, Drew, I think it is. I think Anaheim, if you had to pick one team that's been a little bit better, Anaheim did have that convincing win in Game 3. They obviously, the two other games they lost were both in overtime. So if you had to choose which team's been better, you'd probably say Anaheim, but it's very close. And Anaheim's really interesting in the looks that they'll give you. They give you the size, they give you a mix of size, but boy, their speed's really been apparent, hasn't it?
It has been apparent. Emerson Edom's looked really good.
Yeah.
Really good WHL player. And Ryan Getzlaff has been good. And it's interesting what they're doing, too. They're, you know, we talked a lot about matchups. You know, Babcock, Richie's kind of the master guy. Carlisle was a master matchup guy with the Anaheim Ducks. They had David, I don't know if you guys noticed this, you probably did, but they had David Steckel, because he's such a good faceoff guy, on the top line, and they bumped Ryan Getzlaff, down to the second line. So for parts of the game, David Steckel was playing with Corey Perry, who hasn't really got it going. He's the one guy
that
hasn't really got it going. Bobby Ryan's been okay, but Corey Perry hasn't put the puck in the net a lot in the first 4 games of the series, and he's a guy that I'm expecting tonight to really get it going. The Anaheim Ducks feed off of physicality, because it's funny. Everybody looks at Ryan Getzlaff and Corey Perry and their goals and their points. Same thing with Bobby Ryan, but those guys are physical guys. Bobby Ryan was throwing his weight around, and as far as I'm concerned right now, this is a very evenly matched series. I thought that on Datsyuk's goal, the winning goal in Game 4. I thought it was a weak goal. I didn't think that goal should have been let in. But the Detroit Red Wings deserved to win Game 4. But you've seen Anaheim win the first game, and then Detroit comes back, and then, you know, vice versa. So it's gone back and forth. But really, this series is going to come down to probably an overtime goal. I'm expecting this one to go to 7 games. I think we all predicted this one to go long. Maybe we can check on that.
Hang on, I got it right here. You actually had Anaheim in 5.
Okay, well, that was a bad pick.
That would have been a hard prediction.
I wouldn't be surprised if Remus puts that one on YouTube of me looking like an idiot, which is a weekly occurrence on this show.
Well, your predictions might be better than mine.
I did pick Anaheim in 5, but I should have probably. I think you guys picked them in 7 or 6 at the very least. But this series
I had
is
them
going
in
to 6.
Richard
games.
Had them in 7.
Yeah. So Richie's as usual is the smart one on this show.
When Anaheim has been dominant, and you look at the, I think it was Game 3 that they won. What was it? 4-0.
4-0. Yeah.
And then you look at Game.
But that was luck because of the penalty, too, the applicator penalty.
Fine, right. Which,
yeah, he won't play tonight either.
He won't play. He's suspended. Yeah. And then, I mean, you look at the other game where they were down 4-1 in the third period.
Game 2, yeah.
Game 2. And they came back, and, I mean, they scored all those goals in the
third
period to tie the game.
Yeah.
When they've been dominant, they have Detroit's had no answers whatsoever for them at all.
Yeah, you know, that's true, Drew, and then that's when they're being physical and then they're moving their feet, obviously, the Detroit.
So shouldn't the solution seem apparent?
Yeah, but
for the Ducks?
It's easier said than done.
Right, but they were doing it.
They were doing it when they saw the opportunity. I mean, desperation's a funny thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sure, play a lot better when you're desperate. I think the Ducks really saw an opportunity slip through their hands in Game 4. I expect them to be pretty focused here tonight. Against the Wings, and I do think if you've watched most of the series, I've not seen most of this series. Obviously, traveling, Drew, you and I, we haven't seen as much as we'd like to. I think for the most part, Anaheim's been the better team. Again, I mentioned that earlier, not significantly, but has been the better team. And I think they do have a little bit more. Corey Perry, you'd expect him to break out tonight.
Only got 1 point.
Expect him to break out tonight. Yeah,
only
got
1 point. The series is tied, and he's only got 1 point. Shows you the depth that they've had. But
that's
guys
true.
Like Emerson Edom have contributed. Matt Bolesky scored last game. You've got Kyle Palmieri's played pretty well. They have a pretty deep team, and you know, not to mention Solani and Koivu. They haven't been terrific, but they've contributed. Well,
they
as well.
Each have 3 points.
They've been good. They haven't been exceptional. They're not dominating by any stretch of the imagination, but they have a lot. Drew, they have a lot of talent on that Ducks team. The only thing that concerns me a little bit, their defense is underrated as well. A guy like Lucas Sabiza is very good. He's a very good defenseman. And, you know, Sheldon Soure has really, to be honest with you, has surprised me. Sheldon Soure might be playing the best he's ever played right now, and I didn't expect that out of him. A guy like Francois Beauchemin as well, along with Sheldon Soure, that's their shutdown pair, and for the most part, they're doing a decent job.
But Soure was a healthy scratch in Game 2, and I think it was Game 3, and that's what happened. They lost Ludman. They put him back in. I think that woke him up a little bit, and that's probably a good thing overall. But he has had a bounce back year, the best he's had in, 5 seasons probably.
Yep.
Rangers just scored to make it 2-0 versus the Washington Capitals, a game you can see on TSN. Just didn't quite see who's...
Carl Hagelin,
is that who it was?
Yeah.
So, not the guy you would necessarily think is going to be the Rangers goal scorer there. Just blows it past Braden Holtby. A bit of a rolling puck, but got a lot behind that shot there.
And we're going to have another series that's going to be a best of three. And it's incredible. We're seeing, really, the first round at its finest. It never ceases to amaze me how good the first round is year after year. And it's almost the series that maybe we weren't expecting. Montreal-Ottawa has turned out to maybe not be as good as we wanted as far as the series being 3-1 in Ottawa's advantage. But you have Washington and New York. It's very possible that's going to be a best of three.
Yeah.
You have Anaheim-Detroit that's turned into a best of three. LA-St. Louis has turned into a best of three. It's really incredible. And
well, they say you're never in trouble until you lose on home ice.
A lot better than the NBA playoffs.
I haven't seen it. You know,
except the Bulls beating the Heat.
Unwatchable.
I haven't seen a second of the NBA playoffs.
Oh, unwatchable.
Really?
Unwatchable.
I mean, I wake up in the morning and I'll see what, check my Twitter feed or whatever, and it's all Steph Curry this, Steph Curry that. Not only have I not seen a second of the NBA playoffs, I haven't had a passing interest
playoffs. I'm going to say one thing quickly here. I know we don't have tons of time left here.
No, we really don't.
But it's always nice to see a boozer who can actually be a good basketball player. That gives me a little bit of hope.
That's a great.
Like that one, Remus?
That's a great line.
That was good.
Minnesota, Chicago. This one's done.
Wait, yeah. Boy, was it dead in there last night?
Yeah.
This is a far better team, and that's probably been. And I'm including the San Jose series, which was a sweep, but I don't think, you know, that series was actually as big of a blowout as, you know, a sweep would indicate, because Vancouver wasn't actually too bad in a few games. Well, in a few games, I mean, they went to overtime. I mean, hold on. Chicago is a much better team than Minnesota. Ryan Suter's a great defenseman, and Jonas Brodin should have been a Calder candidate. Mm-hmm. No offense to Brandon Saad. But the Minnesota Wild with, you know, Jared Spurgeon and these guys... Their defense needs more than just Ryan Suter. You're starting to see. And, by the way, we should give credit to Josh Harding. He's played unbelievably. Darcy Kemper had to come in for Josh Harding. But the fact that Josh Harding has replaced Nicklas Backstrom
with his story,
it's a great story.
It's a really nice story.
Remus gave him the cheer on Saturday, much deserved.
For sure.
That guy is an incredible story, and he's done a great job in net until he got injured.
I could have put it better myself, Ezzy. I mean, at the end of the day, you're looking at a team that lacks on D, as we mentioned before the series started. Now they're on their third goaltender against a powerhouse.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. That's just it. I mean, and, you know, you mentioned how, you know, Vancouver obviously got swept. When Vancouver lays an egg and loses four games in a row, there's a huge story that goes with it. If Minnesota had got swept and they didn't win a game, everyone said, okay, that's about what we expected, because nobody had any expectations for them.
You've got no Danny
Columbus
Heatley.
Would have been a lot more entertaining to sneak into that eighth spot.
Through no Danny Heatley, Nicklas Backstrom gets a freak injury before game one.
Yeah.
You're playing the President's Trophy winner. Yeah. You can't... I mean, they've done a decent job there, but, you know, Mikko Koivu and Zach Parise, and, you know, Jason Pominville comes back. They can only do so much against a Chicago team that's extremely deep.
If you're Minnesota, you got a good depth in the system, and you're getting some young guys some really good experience for the long haul, and I think overall you're very happy with the season.
Exactly right. And, I mean, the Chicago Blackhawks really are the only team, you know, in these playoffs. I mean, because L.A., St. Louis was always going to be a toss-up, so you can't really criticize any of those teams. And Detroit, Anaheim, people thought it would be relatively close as well. Chicago is, I think, if you would say the team that's playing the best hockey right now and the Stanley Cup favorite, if it was a little bit close at the start of the playoffs, I think Chicago has jumped out to a bit of a lead.
But I think they're playing the worst team in the playoffs.
Fine, but they're taking care of business.
Yeah, but I mean, we'll see next round.
Yeah, well, next round they're obviously going to, the competition will get harder.
But at least
they're holding court.
Yeah, that's a good point. They are taking care of business, so you have to give them some credit. There are some other teams that LA-St. Louis series is probably going to produce their best competition. But you're right. You have to give them a little bit of credit. They're a well-oiled machine. Corey Crawford's playing well. He didn't get a lot of credit for the way he played in the regular season. And, you know, he hasn't maybe stolen games, but he's been pretty good. And whoever faces them, to say the very least, is going to have to play a pretty good game to beat them.
Well said.
Oh, boy, is it.
That's it for this Wednesday evening at NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to our guests, Arthur Staple of Newsday in Long Island and Ed Willis of the Vancouver Province. In case you missed any of this show and Saturday's show, they'll both be up for download on iTunes later on this evening. You'll also be able to get them on illegalcurve.com and tsn1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. That's it for the Wednesday evening shows for this hockey season. But we will be back Saturday afternoon at 12 noon for 3 hours and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Drew, I've got to say quickly, I know we're up against the time here, but it's been amazing. Reminds me of the good old Kick days. It's been awesome to be on the air with you guys for Wednesdays. Hopefully we can do it again next year.
That's the plan. Fingers crossed that the schedule works out. For my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, for producer Michael Remus, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Until Saturday afternoon, we wish you good night and good luck.
You've been listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve. Join us every Wednesday at 6 p.m. for your midweek NHL update. And join Drew Mindell, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg Saturdays for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things NHL. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.